We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that fine gentleman over there, the so-called monster of the Midway, Dan Rubenstein, in the heart of the Midwest, Chicago, Illinois. Sir, how are you?
I'm terrific, Ty. I'm terrific. There's no rain. There's no snow. There's nothing happening. Had a nice weekend. Had a good pizza bake yesterday. Going to make some more today, which is always fun for me. So we're doing an NFL draft show today.
Yes.
And as always, we are driven by Geico. Yes. Confirming.
We are driven by our friends at Geico. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Just wanted to make sure because I'm feeling like the wind in my hair as we drive down the content road here.
That's right.
I love the NFL draft. I basically watch no NFL games before the playoffs just because life is so busy and work is so busy doing Solid Verbal and college football things during the fall time on the weekends. But I love the NFL draft. I love the strategy of it. I love taking players that we watched a ton of in college and seeing how another group of people evaluate what their futures and how good they are or were or seemed but weren't or didn't seem but are, those kinds of things. And I love the mechanics of the NFL draft. And that's why I'm especially excited because this is a first time guest that we're having on today, Nate Tice from The Athletic. I love all of the brains that go into it. And it's such an inexact science. There's so much guesswork to it. But I think that's what makes it incredibly fun and interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I'm quite excited for today's show.
It is also the hardest sporting event to convince your spouse and or significant other to let you watch.
Yeah.
Because when you describe to them what it is,
mm-hmm.
you're going to wait 15 minutes, 10 minutes in between picks, and they're going to call someone to a podium. And in between, it's all filler, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on for hours. 3 days.
Yes.
4 days, however long it is.
Yeah, three. Yeah.
This is where we're at with the NFL draft. But I love it, too. It's awesome. It is great. It is one of those points of overlap between college and pro. If you're a college fan, you want to see how your favorite college stars do, where they get drafted, how they translate to the next level. If you're an NFL fan, in a lot of cases, it may be your introduction into the previous year of college football, right? You don't follow it, you don't watch it, but you care about who your team's going to get. You start reading up on these guys, looking back to see how they did in college. So one of those cool moments for us where we get to talk to NFL people, talk to Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show last year. Now we're talking to his co-host, Nate Tice. Don't forget verballers.com is where you can go if you want to get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early. We've got bonus content out there as well, a Discord server that continues to pop off in these deep, dark, cold days of the college football offseason. You can also go on out there and listen to our limited run of Extra Nuggets, the show that my beloved co-host Dan Rubenstein does with longtime friend of the show and voice of the Chicago Bulls, Adam Amin.
Send around Jeopardy correct responses with additional context. Verballers.com. Once
Verballers.com. Yes. Verballers.com. And also, I know we've been reminding folks, but solidgiveaway.com is where you can go and throw your name in the hat if you want to win an AJ Brown signed Ole Miss mini helmet. You've got until April the 23rd. It's about two more weeks before we draw the winner, and then we'll do it all over again with somebody different. But AJ Brown is up for the drawing right now. Yes. Get your name in the hat.
Yeah. In the college football universe, before we get into Nate and all sorts of draft things, there have been spring games. I don't know if you watched any highlights, news, anything. I saw Clemson. There were a lot of struggles, but maybe it's because they have such strong defensive linemen. I don't know. I watched some clips of Michigan.
Cade Klubnik, man, my boy.
Your guy.
My boy.
Yeah, I didn't see a terrible amount of news regarding spring game stuff outside of that. But we do absolutely need to mention Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins, yeah. The tragedy, 24 years old. And just those who spent significant time around Dwayne Haskins, obviously we watched him from afar and were thrilled to see how prolific a player and successful a player he was at Ohio State and his brief time as a starting quarterback there. But you read the stories and the experiences of the people who spent a lot of time around him, and it's just absolutely heartbreaking to lose somebody like that who had so much meaning, who held so much meaning for so many people. And so it's just a brutal bit of news from over the weekend.
Absolutely devastating. To hear that news, I sent it to you when I saw it. We were both floored. So
yeah, and especially painful reminder, as you know, we're talking about draft stuff and we're talking about, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of a player or of a program or of, like, talking about humans. We are talking about human beings who are doing their absolute best to further their place professionally. But man, just gutted to see what happened.
Well, on that tragic note, Dan, we will segue here to the topic du jour on the show.
Yes.
It is the NFL draft. It is Nate Tice. I don't know, like, do you have any preference when it comes to the NFL draft with respect to the guys that you like? Because I've talked about this before on our show.
Right.
I am a sucker for pretty much every wide receiver.
Yeah.
Every wide receiver, every standout wide receiver that's ever come out of college, I have been utterly convinced that they're going to pop at the next level. To the extent where I'm playing in fantasy football leagues, dynasty leagues, where you're required to draft some of these young draft prospects, and I pick them all, and most of them never pop. I got Tyler Lockett right. It took him a little bit to get there. I've gotten a couple other guys. I got Odell Beckham right. I've gotten a couple guys right along the way.
Yeah, what a brave stand you took. Odell Beckham would be a good NFL player.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to confuse me with Nate Tice, who actually knows what he's looking at. Do you have any guys like that or any position groups like that where you're just hook, line, and sinker for whoever the names are in that given year?
I'm always rooting for not just the players, but the destinations for the Swiss Army knife speed types. DeAnthony Thomas, Tyreek Hill, Percy Harvin, most recently Debo Samuel, who landed in the absolute perfect system and situation. Tavon Austin, guys who are just so fast and so talented and so good with the ball. They're not a pure receiver. They're not a pure running back. They're not a flanker per se. They're not an outside guy per se, where they're the sort of, at best, that interchangeable talent that is lightning in a bottle. But at worst, they end up somewhere that tries to put, you know, the circle in the square peg. So I'm always rooting for those guys who are inside outside players who have that ability to land somewhere that sees the beauty in their specific talents. That's what I root for.
Shall we dive right in?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Alrighty, Dan, joining us now from the Athletic Football Show, with our friend Robert Mays, who actually did this interview with us a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pleased to welcome Nate Tice to the Solid Verbal. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, now you got both of us. That's good. Completed the set. Now you need Lindsey Jones and Shio Kapadia. If you
We're
guys
working
have
our way.
Two.
Yeah, we're working our way through the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you did the reverse Mortal Kombat. You started with Shao Kahn.
Whoa.
And now you're on to Goro.
What? Right,
I guess I'm Goro.
That's true. A natural Goro. Yeah. Nate Tice. We'll use that.
Thanks. I appreciate that. No, thanks for having me on, guys. This is perfect. I know our pre-show, I feel like I've used up all my good bits. So hopefully I have a couple more.
Yeah.
See if we can harvest those. Yeah. As we go through here. So look, how are you? Right. You've been intimately involved with all things football for a good long time now. You know, sort of in this role now with The Athletic, you're making the rest of us smarter. And that's why we wanted to bring you on, because the NFL draft happens a few weeks from now. The draft is one of those points of intersect between college football fans, hardcore college football fans, and the NFL. And there's always that gray area, right? Like the translation from college to pro. How have you been spending your time now as you're trying to suss out the NFL draft? Like, what is, can you give us a sense for what that looks like for you as you're evaluating talent?
Yeah, right now it's kind of the calm period, which is kind of funny. The closer it gets, the calmer it gets. But I would say when I'm starting out, and this is my first year doing this on the media side, where during the season I'm covering the NFL stuff with Robert, doing the shows, writing stuff up, you know, what I see, and then also having to keep tabs on college guys. So this is my first experience doing this stuff from the media world. And really, you're just starting out, okay, who are the draft eligible guys? And going like, okay, yep. All right, who are your seniors? And now that's actually become even dicier. That's what I actually went through this year with all the COVID stuff and everybody getting those extra years. How teams listed their guys on websites was all inconsistent. Already Notre Dame and Stanford do something screwy because they don't say redshirt and stuff. So that always is like, God. And now we got the COVID year. And so you got like this guy, Tyler Algier from BYU. There was one side that had him as a sophomore, one side has him as a junior, one side had him as a redshirt senior. And like, it was just like, okay, what are you? But that's just part of the fun. But figuring all these out, you're really hoping for these guys to pop. You know, of some guys, like going into this year, I knew who John Metchie was. I know who he is. I've watched Devontae Smith. I watched Jerry Jeudy. But like a guy like Jameson Williams just stepping up out of nowhere. That's what's fun, like with the scouting process, is these guys pops. It's the Joe Burrows come out of nowhere. But then there's guys that you've heard about for years and years and years, the Thibodeaux of the world, that you know about since senior year of high school. And so that's what's fun about scouting, is that just getting to like see these guys reveal themselves. And once I really like to wait until about December or so, like to really get a feel for these guys when you have a full season of tape. And you're trying to watch these guys against the best competition. I also like to watch these guys against maybe lesser competition to see them actually dominate. Like, see, like, hey, in perfect circumstances, what did you do? Like, well, how did you do it? As well as the big games, you know, against when they go against the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Ohio States of the world. But really, long-winded answer to say, scouting is just letting it wash over you and just hoping that someone pops. And then you're just like, okay, whoa, that guy's notable. And then checking lists to see, you know, other people are seeing the same thing.
Nate, you mentioned guys that come out of nowhere. I want to bring up Kenny Pickett for a second, if I could. I know in some of the analysis you've done, you have some commentary about his progressions, how he needs to develop on that front. Obviously, the talking point going into the draft and after the combine has been the 8.5-inch hands, which another data point. But you hit on something with the guys who come out of nowhere that I've always thought, and I'm not an analyst, I'm not a scout, but my untrained eye is always a little bit concerned when a guy like a Kenny Pickett has just a meteoric rise in the course of one season. Kenny Pickett threw more touchdowns this past season than he had in the previous three combined. It was an incredible year by any stretch, but I always worry that guys like that are fool's gold. Now, counterpoint, Joe Burrow, not fool's gold, and he fits a similar template, but give us your sense of Kenny Pickett. How worried should folks be? How high should he go on draft day? What is his status as a pro quarterback moving forward?
Yeah, what's with Pickett is, and people have compared these two as Burrow and Pickett just because of that meteoric rise. A lot of this is going into process and going what they do as the snap's going pre and post snap. So just discerning what the defense is, if they have any protection stuff, and then after the snap, seeing where their eyes go. And why I'm bringing that up is even before Burrow's huge year, I'm not going to say like I have heard of Burrow before that big year, but when you would watch him and then watch the previous season before he blew up, you could still see some of the processing stuff. You could still see some of the flashes of going, okay, you get it. Like, you get how to play the quarterback position. The offense wasn't great. You weren't great either, but you at least, like, you know, you looked like a day three pick, like, at the time. He really looked like a fifth, sixth, seventh rounder type. And then he just exploded. That now we're all going to know who Joe Burrow is for the rest of our lives. With Pickett, is yes, all he is an older prospect and all that. And why I bring that up is that is what's more than the hand size, more than any of that stuff, is for a guy that's an older guy in an offense that he's been in before, he doesn't really stand the pocket and process how I thought he would. I thought he would be a 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 machine, just a vet, you know, just sitting in there knifing and, you know, dicing guys up from the pocket. And really, he's a one and done guy, which is also his strength. And when I mean one and done, it's I'm going to read A. That's not open. Scramble time. Let's make a play happen. And that's his best asset, is he can create, which is needed at the quarterback position in the NFL now. You can't just be a Bledsoe. You can't be just, you can be Tom Brady, but you also need about 10 years of experience to get to that level of sitting in the pocket and not creating with your legs. You need to be able to create, especially early in your career, so you can get the mental reps. So the fact that he's a guy that's been in an offense for years or a couple of years, he's an older prospect, he's going against younger guys. And the fact that he still mentally is more of like a one and done freshman, sophomore type, that's my cause for concern with him. I have him as a late second, early third round grade. And this is not like it's kind of a joke, but I don't mean it to be. I compared him to Tyler Haneke from Washington. And the fact that I think he's a better version of that, and how Pickett wins, how all these guys, you have to figure out how they win, and how Pickett wins is creation and accuracy. And if his mental processing from the pocket, he can get to a system that's a little more patient with him. I think he needs more time than people realize. I think people are like, oh, plug and play. He's pro ready. I think he still needs some time as far as mentally to like calm himself down in the pocket and really like process from there.
You've also made a similar comment about Matt Corral from Ole Miss and Sam Howell from North Carolina. Now, different context. I think you focus in a little bit more on the systems that Corral and Howell have run. But the criticism is sort of in the same vein with regard to processing.
Yeah.
When you get to this stage in your career, Nate, I mean, you obviously are pretty familiar with the NFL and how things work on that level. Can you coach a guy up to the point where that processing gets to where it needs to be, where the read progression can get to where it needs to be? Or is the concern that it's too little too late at this point?
Yeah, you can. And that's why... It's a guy I'm going to talk about both sides of my mouth. You can, but the thing is, it takes time, and it also you want to see the flashes of it when they're in college.
Okay.
Because then it's a can or won't thing. Are they doing that because you can't do it or you won't do it? We can teach it into you. You know, like that's what you're trying to figure out. Like that's why. So at Corral is Lane Kiffin and I have seen run various versions of offense, RPO heavy, pro style, mix in, pistol, like just a little bit of everything. He changes it up all the time. Seeing him in situations where the quarterback is usually has to be the most valuable guy, a third and six, a third and seven. Hey, let's drop back and pass, and you have to find the right throw. Lane Kiffin would choose to just run like a QB counter, would just choose to run a screen. And that's where my red alerts go off. And so that's why a guy can come from an RPO heavy system. Mac Jones, perfect example. Like everyone wants to think Alabama is this pro style. It's not. It's RPO as RPOs get. His processing in it was it was magical. It was just how quick he went. 1, 2, 3, like he would just, and the ball would just go to the perfect spot every time. So that was one of those where it's like, okay, you didn't run a lot of pro style stuff, quote unquote pro style, but I think you can. I'm going to make a bet that you can handle it. When you watch a Matt Corral is anytime he has to go 1 to 2, they do run a drop back. It's like, hold on to your hat. Sometimes he can do it. Sometimes it's all over the place. A lot of times he's looking to run. You never really want to see these guys, and both of these guys do, Corral and Howell, is they look to run. And Pickett, they all look to run right away. And why that matters is you have to do damage from the pocket. You have to, because defense is just too fast and good. You can't just keep scrambling. You're going to get whacked over, and you just can't. And it's a 3-yard gain where you just took a shot, and that's not worth it to the offense. Yes, using your legs on like a third down and getting it is good, but not living that way, making a living that way. And so that's where my concerns with Corral and Howell come, is that when they were asked to do the drop back stuff, it was a grab bag. There's no consistency to their game. And it's like, yes, you can get on these guys on the whiteboard and at the combine and go, okay, maybe they can handle it. But when you're seeing just maybe those 3 or 4 or 5 snaps a game and they can't really do it consistently, that's where your concern is, that Well, if they can't do it for five snaps, now I'm asking them doing it for 15, 25 snaps. That's a little scary.
Every year, quarterback classes are basically always looked at as wild cards. You know, everybody's playing different competition, everybody's running different schemes, and everybody's going to enter into different situations. So if you are able to use your captain hindsight of the past three, four, 5 years and say, okay, these were all wild cards. These guys kind of worked out and it wasn't obvious that they would. And these guys didn't. And it seemed obvious that they would. What are there any lessons you can apply to the past three, four, 5 years of quarterback classes looking at this class? We're like, okay, I could see it working out, even though this guy seems like, man, I don't know if it's all there. Are there examples that you can pull from your memory banks?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people will probably say Josh Allen, but Josh Allen is going to be the outlier of all outliers in life. Mm-hmm. I'm not even just talking about football scouting. Yeah. I'm talking about data points in life, stocks. Like you want to compare. That's what Josh. I mean, anything.
Sure.
A baseball card that also becomes, you know, like a Honus Wagner. Mm-hmm. I would say more is Justin Herbert. And that's where I've taken a ton of lessons from it. Actually, really that whole class, Burrow, Tua, and Herbert. Because with Herbert, he was the guy that more than anything, and I think I did an interview once where I was just like, I wish I could just talk with him and see how smart he is. Because there was flashes of him handling it, but the offense he ran was the most basic passing game you'll ever see. Tons of sprint outs, tons of like just two-man routes to receivers wearing like 38 and 27. Mm-hmm. Like you never want to see a receiver wearing a 30 number. That is not a good sign for your offense. So that is a big lesson I've learned. It was that he was playing with garbage skill guys. And I'm sorry if any of them became anything.
An Oregon fan and alum. Yeah, I can tell you, it was extremely frustrating to watch that offense.
It was. And even watching it at Herbert, I wouldn't say I was high on Herbert, but I had like a fair first round grade on him. Trust me, I was not expecting this. No one was. But I loved him in college. But then that was the thing when you're watching him, is that was the can or won't thing. Is that, can he handle the harder stuff? Or is he just like, this is just, you know, like this is what they have to do to get an offense, a tangible offense.
Right.
A whole bunch of OCs, you know, a whole bunch of changes. He was the steady presence and all that. Those are things I would give him more tips of, feathers in his cap coming as a prospect. And same flip side is Tua running all those RPOs. It turns out that's probably what he needs to run.
Right.
And there's nothing against RPOs. Like even in the NFL, you still have to have a sprinkling of them, but you just can't major in them. It's just defenses are just too good. Like they just are. Like you can get once in a while, sprinkle one in, make it easy on your offense, but it's just really hard to major in them. And I think that's what I've learned from Tua is like, we've given it a chance. The Dolphins gave it a chance to run that heavy RPO system. I don't think it's tangible in the NFL.
Is there something you can glean from that? Because I've actually seen data points of like, okay, RPO's removed. This is what a quarterback does or can't do. Is there something you can take from like the ability to decide quickly, the ability to read a defense quickly? Because that is what an RPO demands a quarterback do. Is there something that you can take from that element of, I mean, all of these guys have run it to a certain extent. Is there something you can take from that?
Yeah. And it's processing. Did they make the give or take read properly? And that's really is. They asked him to do this. Did he execute it properly? Or did he just pull it to call his own number and they just made it to a terrible situation? And also just trace wise accuracy. That's Matt Corral's best strength, really, is his how quick of a trigger he has, like how quick he can turn. It's like a shortstop. That's actually his biggest positive. And that's what you look at, too, is just like, are you able to squeeze into tight spaces? Are you able to change arm angles? That's another skill that these guys have to have. Everything's not like drill work where you just catch it. Everything's perfect. Throw it. It's you have to change it down below, over the top, put touch on it. You know, so those are other little trait things that you look at for those.
Is there anything appear to you jump off the videotape, as it were, about practice time limitation, right? That these guys are limited. I mean, they can watch as much tape as they want to do. They can do walkthroughs. They have summer throwing sessions, things of that nature. But you are limited as a college player that you can only practice so much that you can look at a quarterback and say, man, it seems that by all accounts, he is very coachable. He is very eager to like grind it out on the practice field. But you can tell that for whatever reason, the system that they're running, as you mentioned with Justin Herbert, for example, is pretty simplistic and is not asking a lot of him. Is there a guy in this year's quarterback class that you can say, I see the potential jumping off the page if he gets to the right place?
Well, Malik Willis. That's okay. Yeah, that's the easy answer. I would say Desmond Ridder for this, but Desmond, I think, is more of a, he can go into a lot of systems and be okay in. I think he can mentally handle that. I would say Malik Willis, though, going to a system and just taking time. It really, I could see him kind of like fitting in and different, like what you want to ask him, boot game, sprint out game, a lot of, you know, drop back, launch the ball. I don't think quick game would be his forte ever. But I think Malik Willis getting into a Shanahan type offense where they let him move out of the pocket a whole bunch of times, but also having someone he can sit behind where he doesn't have to be the guy. And so that narrows down where he could fit in even more specifically. But that would be an idealistic situation for him, for Malik Willis from Liberty, because he just needs a little, he needs time. It's just not even just the offense he's running, because it's just verbiage, because going from a Hugh Freeze offense, which is very simple, to reading defenses. That's where I actually think his biggest growing pains will happen. He can figure out, everyone, he's smart enough, he can figure out the terms and blah, blah, blah. It's just rote memorization. But figuring out how the defenses are and what they can do and what their looks are, where the pressure's coming from, that's going to take the most time for him. So I think being in a system that makes it easier on him would be the best.
I saw an observation, Nate, from Max Brown of the Pac-12 Network, who pointed out that when he watched tape on Malik Willis, he noticed that he patted the ball before all of his throws. And, you know, he went into a little bit of detail as to why that's not a good thing and how at this stage in his career, maybe that's something you can coach out of him. Maybe it isn't. But, you know, there's such level of detail that goes into these scouting grades. I mean, is there any way to quantify how big of a project a guy like a Malik Willis is versus a guy like, I mean, frankly, all of these quarterbacks are a project on some level, right? But is there any way to quantify that in your mind? Like, who comes with the greatest risk, but potentially the greatest reward?
Yeah, how I have gone about it, and I've stolen this from basketball. Like I'm a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, and they play the play-in game this week, tomorrow. So yeah, but there's a blog, an SB Nation blog for them that's actually pretty great called Canis Hoopis. But in there, a guy that he was like just a commentator that ended up now he works for the Nuggets. He would just do star, starter, bench, or bust. And just how they discern these guys. And ever since I've stolen that when I'm breaking prospects is, what's this likelihood of being a star? What's this likelihood of being starter, bench, or bust? You know, role player, bust. And that's looking at Willis and just trying to give you an answer on this is quantifying that is that he has the highest star potential of these guys. He has the, if we put it at 12%, you know, or 8%, something like that. But he has maybe the lower starter potential where it's just like, hey, he's just the guy. And he also has the highest bunch of bust potential as well, because it's just like he could just totally flame out and all that. So when you're when you go with these guys, and that's what's so crazy for me is I have a same kind of a near grade with Pickett as Willis, but kind of that middle, late second, early third is you're kind of like you give a half round inflation for a quarterback. So if I have a mid second round grade, you take him in the late first. Like that kind of is how it goes, like a little bit. That's why Trevor Lawrence and these guys last year, it's like, no, I have a top five grade on him. Well, let's take him number one. That's pretty easy. But like with these guys, it's you get that half ground inflation. And now you get into the risk reward game is how high do you take a guy like Willis? Like I would never take him, like the highest I would take him is in like the 30s, you know, 30s or 40s. But teams are starting to sound like they take him in the lottery because of that percentage of the star. That's what you're. I think the Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes playoff game broke people's brains. And now everyone, everyone's just like, we need that. We need that. And it's like, yes, you do need that. But you also need these guys to operate from the pocket as well with the creation stuff. You need both now. Like you need these guys need to be superheroes now. It's ridiculous what these quarterbacks can do. This new age and these mid-20s guys. But I don't know if this is a long-winded answer to say like you have to take in the risk of where you're taking the pick and understand what your situation is. But I think everybody has that percentage, that starter percentage different with each of these guys, but that's just how I look at them.
Well,
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, it does. Yeah. You did. And I think you're sort of pushing up against something else that you've been saying that really the consensus for this draft is that there is no consensus.
Yeah.
At a lot of positions, quarterback, chief among them, we could talk about Des Ridder. You're really high on Des Ridder. You've ranked him as your top quarterback. And, you know, this is one of those things where I think for dum-dums like Dan and I, who aren't in the weeds, we're not looking at the video. We see what we see on Saturdays and we kind of break it down from our chair here. But we see Des Ridder and we say, okay, there's been an inconsistency in his game. We see Des Ridder throw behind guys. particularly early in games, as you rightfully pointed out. You look at the tape and you say, well, in some cases, he's trying to throw behind him. In other cases, maybe he's just jacked up early in the game. Desmond Ridder is a guy that we've had our eye on for quite some time, obviously made the playoff this year, had a really good season, really good career with Cincinnati. What makes him your top quarterback prospect in 2022?
Yeah, I've kind of called him the comedian's comedian. Like, that's kind of what he's been. I'm telling you, like, what how you described him a little bit is what I went into him as. I barely watched him in 2020. Like, I watched, you know, the game against Georgia, and that was kind of like, oh, okay, he's fun. That's how I looked at him. He's fun. There's a difference between good and fun, though. And then when I watched him in October, I would say October or November, for the first time on actual tape film, all 22, whatever you want to call it, the cloud, Thunder Exos, whatever term you want to use for it. When I watched him, all of a sudden I was like, oh, shit, you actually like process and you actually like do all the little things that is needed in the NFL. We talk about all the creation stuff you need, that you need to be able to create. Go get a bucket is the term I use. But also you need to be able to do the stuff in the pocket. And the fact that I've seen him create throughout his career, that was what I knew him as an athlete, as a guy that can go. I mean, like, I was not surprised by his 40 time, because I've seen this guy turn on the jets and pull away from everybody. And then all of a sudden I'm watching him against Indiana. He's point protections out. He's moving guys and not just like killing a play where they go from run to pass play, but actually telling the center, hey, you have the point over there. I'm switching the point over here. Hey, Jerome Ford, running back, you got that guy. And then snap the ball and deliver a pass. And that's what kind of perked me up. I had seen them do that over and over. This is all theory. You talk to a lot of these quarterbacks, they got on the whiteboard and they can draw it up. They can go, oh, I changed the protection and I do all that. And as soon as the bullets start flying, they do not do that. They just go, ready, go, snap, I'm throwing the ball. Like, but with Ridder, he was so calm in his processing pre and post snap that I was like, that's what really turned me on to him. I know that's my theory, is that he's so amped up. That's also why I liked him, though, is that he's so competitive. And I can tell that he is. Just how he, everything, like when a ball gets batted down or he misses a throw, you can see him just kind of go like, and he's not blaming the receiver or anything. I've seen receivers drop balls for him and he's mad at himself because he's like, oh, I should put it perfect. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. Like, and I've seen something where he's mic'd up and he was running away from a teammate and the teammate was like, oh, I would have caught you. And then he's like muttering to himself back. He's like, no, you wouldn't have. No, you wouldn't have. And I was like, okay, this psycho robot is my guy. Like, I like this. So a lot of the mentality that he has, the fact that he has improved, much like a Joe Burrow has, where they just took a huge leap from one year to the next as far as how he works in the pocket, how he is processing. So it's like, okay, so you want to get better. That's what you have as a pro. You are your own coach. You want to make yourself better. That's what all the best of the best, the Dak Prescotts of the world, they are psychos. All right, I'm going to spend this much money to like make sure I can do, you know, the hip movements right and get the footwork right. And I can already see that kind of wiring with Ridder. And so that's why I really liked him. The accuracy stuff, you brought it up. I do think the early stuff is because he's amped up, but also his footwork stuff still a little bit inconsistent. So he can, you know, overstride and he'll miss high and the ball just zooms. And that's the thing. His misses are bad. Like they go 10 yards over a guy's head. And it's like, oh, boy, Desmond, come on. Hone in. We're good. Mm-hmm. But I do like that he's able to attack all three levels of the field. He runs true drop back concepts, which is rare. At the college level, to see him that run that well, he's hitting deep passes. Like, he's doing a lot of the same throws that like Stafford was, not like to that level where he's doing trick shots and stuff, but as far as like as he's processing, he's getting right to backside reads. That stuff is tangible. That stuff translates. And so that's why we do the starter stuff. His star percentage might be as high, but his starter percentage is a huge chunk bigger than I think a lot of these other guys in this class.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I want to stick with concepts, and I don't know if this is specifically draft related, but because you're watching so much and because you're watching so many varied styles, and because we know on a certain level, scheme and concept sometimes trickles up high school level to college to pro, whether it's, you know, jet motion or RPOs, things tend to go in that direction, at least sometimes. Are there specific schools? Are there specific systems? Are there specific concepts? Are there specific coaches that do things that you're like, hey, that's a fun and weird thing that this team is doing. Hey, it's interesting how they stacked the plays on this drive to like work off of each other. Or it's interesting how they used this sort of H-back or this sort of, you know, guy in the slot. Is there that team or those, or are there those coaches that you're like, I don't know, this is kind of like a fun little situation brewing here?
Yeah, one of the most fun watches for me was South Dakota State.
Interesting.
And I believe that OC went to Idaho. I think he did, or something of that sort. I'm not sure. But that offense was like a fever dream. Like they had like six different versions of QB sneaks and like fake QB sneaks. I know. It was. I had to watch the running back, Pierre Strong, and I was watching that offense. I was like, this is kind of fun. Coastal Carolina does a lot of goofy fun stuff.
Yeah.
And that one, again, that one's like a fever dream. I'm going to use the same adage for that, because that one is like, it's almost like a triple option offense, but it's not. It's like, it's weird. They just do everything, but they do it like, but it makes sense. Like their guys are really well coached. They're a very fun unit to watch. They're winning, so obviously that helps, but they do a lot of fun stuff. Also Louisiana Lafayette, which is just also, they just do a lot of sound stuff. I would say on the defensive front, what Derek Mason did at Auburn actually like flashed some like really like some cool stuff. He was the defense coordinator last year, right? Yeah. And that was kind of, and that's just me as like watching, I was watching offensive guys, but I'd watch them go against Auburn's defense. And I realized that their defense was up and down. So I maybe caught three good games of it. But he was doing some sweet stuff on defense, and just more, again, this is more just soundness, and there's a couple plays that have been stolen already. So I wish I could be like, oh yeah, we're going to steal. Yeah. Like, I could see this one coming into the NFL. I would say some of the stuff that might be matriculating to the NFL is some of the motion stuff with the RPOs, where people just more grab bag stuff that they can pull from in the NFL level, where they just maybe have a guy in motion and reading the flat there. Cincinnati does a play. I've seen the Texans run this when Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien were there. I don't even know if I could say Deshaun Watson's name, but they run this just as RPO, where it's zone read, but then the tight end is in a run sense it's called split zone, where they kick out the backside DN, but they don't block him and he just runs to the flat. And it's such a simple play.
Yeah.
So basically what you're creating is a naked bootleg as well with the zone read all in one play. And I'm shocked teams haven't stolen this, because at the NFL, you can do this because the offensive line can't get downfield on this one. So I've only seen one NFL team really run it. I've seen the Chiefs run it maybe once, but I'm waiting for teams to run that more, because that thing is stealing. Like the Cincinnati ran that like 12 times a game. It was awesome. It was just like run the zone, drum forward, going for 15 yards, or we're just going to throw it to the tight end in the flat for 8 yards. It was like the easiest play. But I'm waiting for that one to get maybe proliferate more throughout the league.
Did you have any, at least to your eyes, accidental discoveries along the way as you were watching player A, quarterback A, and you're like, who is this receiver, or who is this right tackle who is just smothering dudes? Like, I guess it's the old Aaron Rodgers story, right? Jeff Tedford went to the JC to look at a tight end, and he was like, who is this quarterback?
Whipping it in there.
Do you have any like surprise pops, really either side of the ball, you know, if a safety pops or a right tackle or a receiver, who are your surprise pops? And they don't even have to be in this year's draft class, but who jumped out to you?
Oh, easily. It's Will Levis or Levis. I'm not even sure if it's safe.
Levis. Okay, I have a question Levis. About Will Levis.
Yeah, Ty has down, a Will Levis curiosity.
I wrote down a Will Levis question. Continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's I'm excited to talk about him. I kind of drop hints on him. Yeah, I was stunned. I was watching Wendell Robinson, the receiver, mm-hmm. and I liked him. I compared him to Cole Beasley, which I was pretty proud of. Mm-hmm. It's so watching him, and all of a sudden I'm seeing this quarterback, and it was the Georgia game. It was my first exposure to him, and ball just popping out of his hand, and I was like, okay, that's pretty interesting. You throw it kind of funky because he does everything really quick. Like it just, mm-hmm. The ball just comes out. And I was really surprising me, but he was big. He was scrambling around. He was running over guys. I was stunned how much I liked him. I watched a couple other games against Iowa. I think in the bowl game, and I think another game in between there. And I was like, okay, like there's something to this guy. It's one of those where I'm like, I'm going to keep a tab on you, see how you grow this next year. But he was one that shocked me. I actually was like, are you draft eligible? Let's double check, make sure. But he's coming back for another year. So, but yeah, that one was out of nowhere. I couldn't believe how much I liked him.
Yeah, so I'm a Penn Stater. I don't have your football.
Okay, yes.
I don't have a football background.
Every
like
Penn
you
State
do.
Person always just does this to me about Will Levis. Yeah. So I want to hear this.
I'm a Penn Stater. I'm familiar with Will's early discography. And needless to say, it was a little underwhelming. Part of that could have been the system he was in, obviously a lot better under Liam Cohen in Kentucky, and plenty of room to grow this year. But I will admit, Nate, when I saw you had some first round steam on him on your Twitter, I was like, ooh,
I know.
I need to make sure I'm fastened to this chair right now. I did not see that coming.
This is where I'm telling you, I get this exposure to guys. Like, this is the same thing that happened to me with Ritter. I was like, I've never heard of this guy. I watched him play once. And then, so it's kind of fun. So some of that, like you said, the early discography, like I didn't hear that album.
Nate doesn't have the baggage though.
No, I just heard the mixtape and I was like, hey, exactly. He was featured on this song and it was pretty good. Like I liked him on that feature. So maybe I'm going to check out his whole album. And and I could see him, like, even if you look at his stats, he's like, I think like 24 touchdowns. He still had 12 picks and you can still see some dummy in him. So that's why he's not perfect, but it was like, it's the flashes of him. But every Penn State person I've talked to has just gone, man, he was like Taysom Hill when we had him. Like he was just some run around gadget guy. And so that's what's interesting that I've heard that he's worked with a coach just like Ritter has, where he's really like a private coach where he's really worked on all his pocket stuff. So maybe some of that stuff's coming to fruition with him. He might drop off the face of the earth. Who knows? This stuff's so hard.
But you know, you bring that up, right? So, you know, I'm sure you've gotten the commentary from Penn State people. And if we expand it out, not just Will Levis, but like draft time, when you're evaluating talent, it's got to be a massive exercise in avoiding groupthink. Because especially now in the media world, everybody's trying to get clicks. You know this now, right? Like everybody's trying to get clicks. Everyone's trying to have the hot take that makes their stuff pop, makes their star rise a little bit, for lack of better terms. Like how do you avoid those pitfalls and sort of come to your own conclusion when there is so much out there? I saw today, I mean, I looked at a couple different mock drafts even before this interview. There really is no consensus. People think Aiden Hutchinson's the number one pick, but there's like 15 other opinions out there. How difficult is it? Give voice to how difficult it might be to kind of formulate your own opinion in this time where there are so many to go around.
No, and that's a great point to make, or a great question. One is just do the work and come to your own conclusions. Like, yes, and I would be a liar if I said if I ignore the noise and I don't look at what other people are saying. That I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say I don't. I'd say for me is you kind of go, okay, this is where these guys are kind of in the area that they're in. People are kind of talking about this guy as a first rounder. But for me, how I just go about it is, just doing the work. And that kind of leads to its own conclusions. And this is just for me and just like having my own statement on something. That's why I think I was really early on my love for Desmond Ritter was I just wanted to be like, hey, this is funny that I say it. I'll admit to trying to farm that internet dopamine as well, is going like, hey, this is my guy that I'm planting my flag on, Desmond Ritter. Cause I want to just go, I'm not a Johnny come lately. I'm watching him. And this is what I think after watching all these top guys. And so there's a little bit that where you have to do that to stand out. Otherwise people just go, oh, you just, you're, you're just crowdsourcing. You know, you're just taking what everybody else
it's
is saying.
It's a no-win situation for you.
It really is. It really is. And but that's, for me, is just trying to do the work and actually watching these guys and taking the notes and just going like, this is what, how I feel. Like, everybody's going to have their own personal biases, you know, with these guys, and going like, I have a certain, like a receiver, I love big ball winners. Like, I just do. I like size at the receiver position, actually really every position. That's just what I have liked. That's in the NFL, a lot of stuff becomes durability question marks. Like, that's why people always go, wow, why didn't this guy make it in the NFL? Well, he's probably 5'9", 178. Like, you know, that doesn't hold up in the NFL unless you're a freak. But that's where that's why I'm going to have my own personal biases, but I'm always going to just go like, well, the stat people really like this guy. All right, I'm going to give him a second look. Oh, this guy ran a 4.38 at the combine. Well, you know, I have a second round grade on him. All right, I'll take a second look. So that's really, it's just, we're all going to have our own processes for it, but that's just mine doing the work and just taking all the data points. But also real quick is that you're saying there's no consensus. I actually think that's what makes it so fun for this draft class.
Oh yeah.
It's because it's going like, all right, what do you see? Like, what, everybody's it's the eye of the beholder always. But now, as opposed to like last year, we had so many blue chip, true blue chip guys. This year, it's more going like, all right, who's seeing the right things or is making the best educated guesses?
You mentioned your own kind of bias towards size in the NFL. Yeah. I want to talk about some of the other skill positions, if I could, quickly before we let you go. But especially on the receiver side, I heard a recent show you did with Robert, and you talk about Drake London as your top receiver, and you like him because he's got the size. He won, what was it, 19 50-50 balls, some high percentage, right? He's clearly a freak. On the flip side, you've got a guy like a Chris Olave, who is smaller, but seems to be a really gifted route runner, could find his place in the NFL because of that. I'm curious to get more of a breakdown of that wide receiver position because, you know, when it comes to draft day, it is a position that is much talked about. We see these guys out there on game day every Saturday. How that game translates to the NFL, at least for me personally as a college football fan, I've always had a really hard time figuring out who's going to pop at the next level and who isn't. How do you kind of do that calculus from your side?
Yeah, and a lot of it is, this is where tape, because receivers is, some of these guys get six targets in a game. And if you only watch those six targets, you're missing out on 60 other plays where you can get something from these guys, where they're just running a route but not getting the target, and you can see them working against press or working a route that they haven't gotten the ball on, but you can see them running that type of route of the route tree. So that's where, you know, watching these guys really comes up. Also seeing their effort and blocking. And I know that sounds like I think I've won some people over on it on our show because they thought I was just like, oh, coaching, like, oh, you're just an old coach that talks about it. Matters. It really matters, because if you want to be in three wide receivers and run the ball, those receivers have to block. Like, if you're taking off tight ends and fullbacks, like, that's what they have to do. It's just part of the position now. And so that's where some of the size stuff comes in, and more of just toughness. And that's what's so funny is that I'll start with him is Chris Olave. Is he's not usually the guys I like. I love his route running. He is advanced, as one of the most advanced route runners I've ever seen come out of the college level. And on top of that, he has speed, legit speed that he uses. It's not just a theory thing where it's like, whoa, you ran a 4.38. I thought you were gonna be a 4.5 guy. It's actually, he uses that speed to his advantage. I like his ball skills. His my negatives with him is he is smaller as far as play strength. He's not a good blocker. He can get pushed around if more physical guys, but he can overcome it because he's so skilled. So that's why I'm okay with him as opposed to usual with the smaller guys or skinnier guys, I should say, because he's not small. He's 6 foot, but it's just skinny. He's just skinny. And that always matters with durability stuff. But then Drake London is, I went in, this is what I thought. I thought he was just going to be some big dude, almost like one of the Clemson guys that's come through the years, Mike Williams, the T. Higgins of the world. He's just big, big, almost stiff, but just like snatch everything. And why I loved London so much was he was sinking on routes. You could see the athleticism, even if his long speed's not there, his 1-10 speed was actually pretty good. And also being able to actually run a full route tree, even if that was it's a true air raid offense that they ran. And oh my God, so many screens. I couldn't believe how many screens are running. Oh my God.
Yeah, you have Drake London and you're throwing him short balls all the time. Yes.
Over and over. And it's also the quarterback was late all the time. Yep. And that's where some of the separation like arguments came. Well, you can't separate. It's like, no, he's separated. The quarterback was 3 seconds late. Mm-hmm. So he had to plant his foot and go up and get it. Against Oregon State, I watched him and he legitimately drew 5 penalties in that game or more. That's just off the top of my head. I can remember. So it's like he's dominating. Like he is dominating as much as you can see a receiver dominate at the college level, and the versatility that he brings. He can work from the slot. He can block. Like they have him running like tight end blocking stuff. So it's like this guy, no matter what, I think it can just be useful. Like, and if the upside, he still has upside though. He's super young. He's just become like finally becoming a full-time football player for the first time in his life. I just like the package of him. Size, ball skills, route running. Just all the like polish that he's already shown, and he's so young at such a young age. So that's why I really, really like him. There's a couple other guys, like bigger guys that I always gravitate towards. Like I'm high on Justin Ross from Clemson.
Sure.
And what's funny is I remember as a freshman, but really my grade off of him, I have a early second grade on him, and medicals are going to be a train wreck for him.
Yeah.
But is this past year I was watching him and I was like, this guy's a stud. It's just that the quarterback was hitting the stands on the throws. Mm-hmm. And so this poor guy's breaking guys off on routes and then seeing the ball like go over his head. He looked like, you know, like a pitcher that gives up a home run and the ball, and they just look at the ball go over. That was Justin Ross running routes.
Yeah.
But what I liked about him was that he would still compete as a blocker. He was still into the game, even though the targets weren't coming, the stats weren't coming. So that really maybe I was like, okay, you get it. Like you want to compete, and receivers can be come and go with their competition levels. So those are always positives that you want to see. You know, then you want me to just talk about the rest of the first round guys I have?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Who
so
do you got?
My number three is Jameson Williams. And I think everybody's watched college football now knows about the draft, knows what his game is. Speed, speed, speed. But what I liked about him is he was more of a real receiver than I thought he would be. He actually knows how to run routes and actually knows how to tempo his stuff. Bit of a body catcher, which I didn't like, but I still like him as like he's useful. Like no matter which team he goes to, you always have a use for speed. Mm-hmm. And then next, I really like Jahan Dotson from Penn State. I know that preaching to the choir probably here, but I think he's just a ball player. Like, mm-hmm. I think he played with bad quarterback play or iffy quarterback play. And he is, I think he's just a hell of a football player, plays big. I compared him to Tyler Lockett. And then Treylon Burks from Arkansas, which is one of the weirdest studies I've ever had for the receiver position, just how they use him. I think he's a big boomer bust candidate. But if he gets to the right system that guides him along, I think he still has to learn how to play football. I don't think his understanding of the playbook's all the way there. That's why they motion him so many times. They have to tag him and tell him, hey, Treylon, move to the right, run this route. So I do think there's part of that. So his learning curve is going to be a little steeper. But if he hits, he'll hit pretty well because he's just has so many cool traits. And the last one's Garrett Wilson from Ohio State, which I have some concerns with his route running, how he plays against press. But when you get the ball in his hands and it's just like, go do stuff because he's so dynamic. I compared him to Brandon Ayuk from who's with the 49ers now, where it's a little bit more boom busty, but it's like just get the ball in his hands and let him go make plays.
Who is the highest star potential guy on your board? Either any position, any side of the ball, whatever. You mentioned Ooh. Malik Willis has the highest star potential of any of the quarterbacks, but just in terms of like, look, you're in Vegas. If you're betting 10,000 of your own American dollars that this person will be a Pro Bowler, who is that person?
Drake London. Okay. I do. I think that if he, I'm not as concerned about his long speed. I know he hasn't run and he keeps putting off his pro day, but I'm not as concerned as other people are because he just win. Like it's just a useful NFL player, NFL receiver. And I think that if he does take a next step, that it's like, oh, who's going to guard him? Like I've seen now for 7 years, no one can guard Mike Evans unless you just double team on basically every play. I think he's not as big or as truly as explosive as Mike Evans is, but I think he's more skilled. So it's kind of like a fun match. I know I'm super high on him, and
that's
I feel like
great.
I go crazy on him. But then I just watch every time I rewatch him, I'm like, yeah, I double down on that. But I do think he has some of the most star potential, especially of this crop. And it's a good crop of receivers. It really is.
It must be. By the way, it must be maddening. And you know, it's easy to dig on where USC has been these past couple years.
Yeah.
To look at players, where you're like, he's definitely getting the ball. Like, he's too, everybody knows he's getting the ball, or everybody knows this running back is getting the ball. Everybody knows where this team has to go because there's so little talent or organization. And yet the guy still succeeds. And there are examples of that up and down the NFL, guys who were taking lower rounds who were just like, they somehow always got open. They somehow, and so it's got to be infuriating to you to have to watch these bad football teams with these like lone shining stars who are maximizing their winning potential.
It's rough. It's rough. When you, I've realized every time I do this, I'm like, oh, I've been spoiled with NFL play. Because you're just like, even the quote unquote bad NFL teams, it's like you still watch them and you're like, they're still doing cool stuff, or this player's freaking awesome. Like, but yeah, you watch these college games and it's, I've gotten spoiled not only just play, but just quarterback play, because USC was one of them. I'm watching these guys take forever to get rid of the ball. And I'm like, the throw's there. Just throw it. Just please, for the love of God, just hit him. And or watching Clemson and seeing, like, I was like, man, this guy is taking the long wind up and the ball's over. Yep. So that's after receiver positions where that crops up the most, because you'll go 50 snaps where they don't even get a target. And so you get a little bit bored watching them.
On the flip side, though, I mean, and we'll let you out of here in a couple of minutes, but you've been terrific, so I'm just going to keep you as long as we possibly can. On the flip side, you'll watch teams who are so deep and so talented and so much more talented than the competition. And you mentioned this a little bit with Tua, like he has to run the RPO stuff. But on a certain level, whether it's Alabama or Ohio State or what Clemson was or some of the better teams in the country, are you like, yeah, but it's a little bit easier for them because this guy's the number three receiver and numbers one and two are getting so much attention. So he's drawing, you know, a worse corner or a worse nickel or whatever, or this offensive lineman is drawing, you know, or is surrounded by other crazy talented guys. This defensive lineman is playing with another guy who's getting double teams all the time. Like, how is it difficult to sift through a more advantaged player, I guess?
Yeah. Yes and no. It's especially for quarterbacks. It's the offensive line. And what they have to deal with, like that speaks to Ritter a little bit more. It was, no one really brought up the Cincinnati offensive line. They were not good.
Right.
they were like below, I would say average. I'll put them at average, but they watching them. And that's like, it speaks more to Ritter, but then you watch another guy. I'm trying to think of like one of the past, maybe Mac Jones last year, I'll just bring him up, but like just sitting there and they just get to hang out and just, or Russell Wilson when I played with him at Wisconsin, where he just hung out in the pocket and was just like, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, kind of like, all right, I'm going to go scramble, just go make something happen. So you always have to take that into account. You also get kind of a good litmus test kind of going, like seeing, especially like running back, this will happen a lot. Okay, this running back goes, he gets three carries. Okay, he looks okay. How does his backup look? Getting behind the same offensive line, running the same play, same situation. That's the position, I think, more than others, you can really get a tell for a situation and based on how their backup does. Like, that's one of the reasons I was kind of lower on Isaiah Spiller at Texas A&M. I'd watch his backup go in and break off an explosive play, and then he goes in and he gets 4 yards. And I was like, man, this one was actually blocked better. Like, you gotta make something happen with it. So I would say that position more than others, you can really see stuff. I would say quarterback, yeah, you have to take that into account. This is like, I watch Ritter, and this is, again, I'm Mr. Optimist on him, but you watch him, unless he's thrown to Alec Pierce, who I also like, the receiver, or the tight end Wiley, everybody else was dropping the ball every other time. It would hit him right in the chest and drop it. So you take that into account. You're like, well, I'm going to watch the process of this guy.
Yeah.
Don't look at the result. Look at the process leading up to that. Especially all these guys, it's process, 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 and then it leads to good results. If you're on a good team, the good results happen all the time. If you're on a bad team, it's like, wow, that process was good. Another drop. Oh, that process was good. Left guard got beat. Those things start adding up. I think that's the big difference, is the good teams get the results more, which makes sense with all the wins.
Yes.
Nate, I know we've asked you about, you know, some very specific draft things here, but who are just some other names, guys that you came across? Maybe not the accidental discovery as Dan described earlier, but just guys that you like, guys that you enjoyed watching on tape, who you were rooting for on draft day.
Yeah, Khalil Shakir from Boise State. Okay. Is probably one of my favorite watches of any position. I have a high second round grade on him. I'm shocked. Like I'm waiting for people to catch. People like him, but I thought kind of maybe he ran pretty well at the combine. I thought maybe he'd get another little bump, but I love him. I think he's a returner. I think he's gonna be a very useful in early in his career. Number two, can play slot, can play outside, good route runner. He's just got short arms, but good returner. Like just a ball player. Like I really like him. Other guys like Sky Moore, I'm not the first person to say that they like him. Right. I've already brought up Justin Ross, who I'm super high on, that, you know, the injury concerns is what's going to make him drop a little bit. That's our receivers. I would say tight end, Greg Dulcich from UCLA.
Yeah.
He's been a late rise. He was a declare. That's where we're talking about. Oh, wow. This guy's eligible. Had no idea. And then he declared. And I was like, oh God, I got to watch him real quick. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, he's pretty damn good. Runs like a deer. Like he is. I compared him actually to Jared Cook, which is like so funny because he's really high cut, really long legged. So it kind of actually hurts him blocking because he can't get low. And this is all detailed. Like this is just random. This is how he is. But he can run and take like a true vertical threat or at the tight end position. I really like him. Cade Otton from Washington. Good blocking tight end. Kind of does everything well. Really like him. Another Derek Deese from San Jose State. He's like a day three guy, but I really like him as well. He didn't run or anything. So I always hate that. I'm like, I went to the Shrine game. I was waiting for him. I was like, this is kind of my baby, like my little dark horse. And then he rolled an ankle, sprained an ankle, like individual first practice. And he didn't practice. And I like dropped him around because I was so frustrated with him. Like, I would give him a chance. I would say even if we're going running backs, I really like Rashad White out of Arizona State. Yeah. That's kind of like my little.
Yeah, he was their offense.
Dude, he is. I saw Richard Sr. with him and I was like, okay, that's running back. You don't really want to see that. And then you watch him and he is talented. He is such a fun player. Tyler Algier, I like him from BYU, compared him to James Conner type. I like Jerome Ford from Cincinnati. Those guys, I really like all of them. I got one other guy and it's on the tip of my tongue and now I can't think of his name. But anyways, those guys are, Ty Chandler from North Carolina. I like him as a day three guy. A little long legged, but I think he's useful. I think someone's going to like him a little bit, but yeah, I really like this running back class. There's a lot of like round three, round four types that a couple of them are going to hit for somebody.
Final question. You're in Vegas. You've talked about preferring size from your NFL draft prospects. Yeah. My co-host Ty is a five-tool player, but if there's something that Ty does not bring to the table, it is elite size. About 5'9", what, 160, 155? Yeah. Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I'm not starting in the league. I'm not.
You're not starting in the league, but my question to you, as somebody who prefers and has been around size, you're in Vegas. If Ty is in Vegas, and you can't answer buffet or anything like that, we're building quality mass on Ty via a series of meals. Okay. What is your itinerary for Ty building quality mass in restaurants in Las Vegas?
I would start with lunch at Good Pie, which is pizza joint in downtown Vegas, which is... it's an area called, it's on Main Street. It's the Arts District, which is which is basically they threw a bunch of hipsters at it and it became a spot. But it's great. It's great though. Good Pie. I would start with lunch there. Dinner would be, oh my God. Dinner, you go a million places. I like Al Mafi at Caesars.
Okay.
I'm trying to run my brain here. That's more Mediterranean style. There's a place out here in the suburbs in Summerlin called Harlow's, which is a steakhouse that I adore. I love. It's by Rob Marinelli, the former coach.
Yeah,
it's his daughter. She's a chef. She's awesome. But Harlow's out here. I'd also go to Italy, which is multiple places. Sure. There's one in New York. There's other. But there's a sandwich there I would also get. So if you're going in between lunch and dinner, I would get a sandwich there. There's it's super simple. It's just a really good bread. They put olive oil, salt, pepper, and just like a little some meat on there. Some rope.
I think I've had it. Yeah.
It's so freaking good.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of other dinner places. I kind of like, I'm kind of a grab bag because there's like seven places I like, but I give them all the same rating. So really dinner, you can kind of, I'll let you choose where you want to bulk up there.
Have you done Carbone?
Oh yes. I did it last week actually with my parents. Yeah, that's a good spot. That's Carbone, actually really good there as well.
It's like elevated red sauce Italian Thai, and you're going to do real well. Like you can stuff yourself with the bread that they'll bring you like a basket the size of your torso of bread with sopressata and Parmesan cheese. And
but what about the vodka sauce, Dan? You know, that's my
that's kind of their strength, Ty. They have like the rigatoni and spicy vodka sauce. That's it's good. The star
Nate,
potential.
We're coming out to Vegas.
Let me know.
Oh, coming out. Man. We got to do this, Dan.
Yes, yeah. Done.
I think you'll be the first tourist ever to come to Vegas.
That's us.
I'll be trailblazing.
I'll bring my fanny
why,
pack.
I don't know why you'd ever come, but I guess you would. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Nate Tice of The Athletic Football Show. We appreciate your time. We appreciate you making us a little bit smarter. Hope you get some sleep over the next couple of weeks. I know it can be kind of crazy leading up to the draft and in the immediate aftermath, but thank you so much for hopping on with us here.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is a lot of fun.
All right. Woo. There you go.
Yes.
Nate Tice, The Athletic. Go check him out on The Athletic Football Show. He and Robert Mays do an awesome job breaking down all things NFL right now. Of course, the big topic is the upcoming NFL draft, Daniel.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch. My very specific watch plan is the same thing every year. It's Thursday night. I say, oh, man, here's the NFL draft. I watch the first 17 picks. I go to bed and then I wake up the next morning and I say, whoa, OK, interesting. And then I watch the first 3 picks of the second round and then I go do something else and I just keep checking my phone and I say, whoa. And I just keep doing that. And then I'll tune back in. And I always like seeing the swap in and out of analysts on the ESPN or NFL Network set or whatever, and then them start to get loopy deep into the draft where they have to go to the bathroom, they're hungry, they're thirsty, they're glassy-eyed, they haven't slept in 17 days. I always like the wild card element of that. So I'm in for all sorts of different amounts of fun with the draft. Love it.
My best draft memory was back in 2013. I can't tell you who was picked, but that was the year I had my reconstructive shoulder surgery.
Okay.
And you can't do anything. I watched all of The Wire and all of the NFL draft in the span of like 2 weeks.
Weird combo.
And yeah, it's true. They do get loopy after a while because it's all filler. And you know from doing this show, we do, an hour and 15 minute show here a couple times a week. Even within the span of this show, we try to limit the amount of filler that we have, but it happens.
Yeah. Sure.
It's inevitable. Those guys have to deal with it. I can't imagine what it's like to try and host that coverage, what it's like to try and provide a different slant when you're on day 3, talking about guys no one's ever heard of, doing interviews, trying to move the coverage 7 hours a day here. I'm equally as impressed by the level of analysis as I am by just the production behind the scenes of keeping the thing afloat.
Have you ever watched it from the other side where like the Colts or the Bengals or the Cowboys, you get to see the behind the scenes show, whether it's, there's a Hard Knocks in season now. There's all sorts of behind the, or some teams just film it themselves. And of course it's the very serious war room.
Yeah.
Right. It's the draft war room. They're doing something extremely internationally important. And there's 37 people in a room and they're all pumping their fists because they got their like number 7 linebacker in the 4th round. And I know this is their lives. I know this is their jobs. I know all of the seriousness that goes with like making the correct or indirect decision, but the seriousness with which those shows are edited and the compounds, the facilities are laid out in the giant whiteboards and the moving pieces, it does make me giggle, Ty. It makes me giggle that it's this industry and this war room and like the phone calls. All right, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. I love the theater of it all. And I don't know how, if you're a football fan, you can't appreciate how lovingly ridiculous it can all seem.
Well, and on top of it, the draft's in Vegas.
Yep.
The draft's in Vegas. It was supposed to be in Vegas, I think a couple years ago, right?
And went virtual.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see the pomp and circumstance, particularly as it relates to the first round, because I have heard varying accounts of what that will look like from a TV standpoint, and I'm excited for it.
Wait, do you have a song pick? Like the song of the year, the commercial bumper where it was like, all of the lights on. Like, remember, we called that like in 2016 or 2013 or whatever year it was.
We got it that one year. Yeah. Well, it's
is there
Vegas.
A track? Because you pay attention.
I do.
To pop music.
I need to think a little bit more about this. Maybe it's something we could talk about on Thursday. I'm gonna
you don't
come
have much more time. Yeah.
I'm going to come armed with a list of 5 songs. I'm not going to look it up. I think they may actually publicize it. I won't look it up.
Okay,
because
good.
That spoils the fun. I don't want to do that. I will comb through the top 40 list and see what pop songs I can come up with that seem like they would work. I have a few off the top of my head, but I need to actually put some research into this one.
Are you a Vegas person, by the way?
I'm a Vegas person for 48 hours max.
Yeah.
Anything more than that. And, you know, maybe it's different if you live there, if it, you know, you've kind of put roots down.
Yeah, it's
there.
A full on city. Yeah,
that's different. But as for a tourist destination, I 48 hours, maybe 72 hours tops. But after that, it's time.
What
to
are
go.
Your priorities there?
I mean, the priorities used. Well, I've been out there for the NCAA tournament, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a great time on NCAA tournament. And the priority was hard gambling when I was there.
On basketball? On table games? Well, on what?
Well, I was there for college basketball. So it was basically wagering on as many games as possible.
Okay.
And then playing blackjack. But that was also before all of these things became more mainstream and more prevalent pretty much anywhere you live.
Sure.
So I'm not sure what the preference would be if I went back. But at least the time I was there, the one time I was in Vegas, it was pretty much let's watch as much basketball as we can.
Oh, that's the only time. That was the lone visit to Vegas. Okay.
The only time. Yeah.
Yeah, Vegas is pretty good. I'm not a gambler. I'm not a drinker. I'm not a clubber. I'm not a strip club person. But man, in my old age, do I just want to go and eat all of the food? It is such a great restaurant city. Not even just the strip, even beyond that. That's to me why I would return to just... And, you know, go to a comedy show or two or something like that. But, man, so many restaurants I want to try out in the desert. So, yeah, that's all I have to contribute to that. And, oh, man, Vegas. Yeah, I haven't been in a long time. Long, long time.
Yeah.
And would like to go back. All right. That's all. I think that's all I have. I would be remiss on another level, though, Ty. Maybe somebody found our show through Nate or through the draft or something like that, or just found it recently. And I imagine somebody says to themselves, you know, the content's okay, but damn, do Dan and Ty sound good. We've gotten that note. Like, man, you guys sound good. And I got to tell you, just in light of, I guess, these past few days, it's definitely Ty. It's definitely Ty who makes this show sound as good as it does. I've gotten better, but it's definitely Ty. And so I just want to give you a bit of a background after these past few days. If you'd like to know why our show sounds so good and so legendary, it's from the majestic heights of the steel stacks.
What is this?
To the insight of the National Museum of Industrial History, the whispering winds of Klein Farms, Ty, the wonder of the Da Vinci Science Center, and up to the peaks and vistas of Hawk Mountain and the Wildlands Conservancy.
I hear the birds. Those are not real birds. They sound like they're right next door.
It's the crisp compression, the legendarily unforgiving noise gates, an unmatched EQ. Welcome to the mesmerizing digital audio landscape of Tygusta National.
This is the dumbest thing you've ever done. I love it.
Is it? It's pretty good, right?
This is great.
I heard it yesterday, and I was like, I don't know. I got to make this a stupid podcast thing because that's how my brain has been shattered into. What a track. And I did throw in fake bird sounds, Ty.
Yeah.
Got some goldfinches, some robins in there.
You threw those in.
I did. That
oh,
was
those
fully
were part
me.
Of the, okay.
I found the track, and then I said, well, I've heard... You know, CBS and the Masters, they pipe in the bird sounds. And would I be not to do the same?
Yeah. They've got like a cardinal mic'd up. You can hear it on some holes. It's very
it's
loud.
Pretty I looked up bird sounds. You can hear. Right?
Yeah.
How's the mix to you?
It's good. No, you did a good
Thank
job.
You.
You're pretty good too. Give yourself a little bit of credit. You've done all of Nuggets. You've done a lot of our shows. You know what you're doing.
I know.
It's but all
I
good.
Just, Tygusta National.
Yeah.
And... Hello, friends. Oh, so I took such a good nap yesterday. Oh, it's so good.
Congratulations to Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah, hook him. Texas is back.
Texas grad. Yeah, Texas finally wins something.
Yeah.
Good on him. Ran away with it in the end.
Yeah, I mean, Texas in their lone huge football win beat Georgia. And so there's some sort of alignment there of Scotty Scheffler.
Jordan Spieth
has
won the Masters, also a UT guy. Scotty Scheffler, originally from, I think, Ridgeway, New Jersey, which is fairly close to me, but moved down to Texas, more of a Texas guy.
Golf school.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, look, this has been a fun show. Nate Tice, go check him out. We're huge fans of Nate's work. The show that he does with Robert Mays is awesome. If you're into all things pro football, go check out the Athletic NFL show. We will be back on Thursday. Going to talk a little bit more about basically what's going on in college football. I know that's what we do here. It is a college football show, but now that we actually have some things to discuss, albeit scant with spring games just kind of starting up here in the month of April, we'll do our best to provide a recap of that. And are we doing the Q&A show? Is that the
plan? I think we're going to do a mega Q&A.
Yeah. So if you've got questions, if you've got things that are pressing that you want to talk more about, hit us up, solidverbal@gmail.com. Of course, if you are on the Patreon at verballers.com, you can always send us in your thoughts via Discord, via Patreon itself. We'd love to get your thoughts on, you know, what's going on in college football and what types of things we should address next. But we'll do that on Thursday. Don't forget, in the meantime, if you did happen upon this show, didn't know about us before, welcome on in. Everybody's welcome. Thank you. To Tygusta National, whatever we're calling this.
Tygusta National, yeah.
Hit the subscribe or follow button. We'd love to have you back for another show. And last but not least, go to solidgiveaway.com. We are giving away a free signed AJ Brown mini helmet. You got a couple weeks to get your name in that hat. All right. So
who's
got
a notable Dan. Who's a notable butler? Welcome to Darius Butler Cabin. I'm so sorry.
For that guy over there. My good friend Dan Rubenstein, from myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thanks so much for downloading, listening, and playing along with our madness at home. We'll talk to you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.